Sports Day for Kia's open season. On now with match-winning deals. And Red Energy, a 100% Australian electricity and gas retailer.
7 minutes past six. Hello and welcome along to Sports Day. Well, the tribunal sits tonight and we'll find out how serious the tribunal views the dangers of both concussion and a potential quadriplegic accident to both the individual and the game are. Dylan Shields' incident warranted the 2 weeks he was given, and Ben Long somewhere north of that for the greater danger of a spinal injury he subjected Sean Darcy to. We will bring you the results as they come to hand. But the one thing that has stood out for me over the past 12 months is just how much we now miss the classification of reckless that was initiated originally by Adrian Anderson years ago when the table was first introduced. At the time, I guess you, like me, didn't sit down and spend enough time to understand the three differences in the categories: careless, reckless, and intentional. But his wisdom has become abundantly clear, to me at least, since its demise. Long and Scheel didn't deliberately set out to KO their opponents, so it wasn't intentional. So the far more lenient category of careless has to apply. But they weren't careless. They were something much more dangerous. They bumped in a manner that recklessly caused the damage they inflicted, and possibly a whole lot more that only time will reveal. Tonight's outcome, as yet, is unknown, but the classification of reckless and the dropping of it has proven to be a careless mistake by the AFL. Scoop McClure is with us. Tell us what's happening at the tribunal as we speak, Scoop, before Lee Matthews joins us.
Hello, Jared. Good timing from you, as always, because news just through in the last couple of seconds, St Kilda's Ben Long has been given a 3-match ban for his bump on Fremantle's Sean Darcy. So some would call that unders. He does miss, what's that, about 20% of the year with his 3 weeks. So we now move on to Dylan Shields' case, Jared, which for me is the more intriguing one. Are they going to have it reduced from 2-1 based on high impact going down to medium?
I think the only way that you could justify reducing it is to say we owe you one from the prelim final about 4 years ago.
I don't think that would stack up.
13-13-32 is the Harcourt's open line. 13-13-32, your response to the Ben Long suspension. And for Club Mandalay, the must-play golf course in Melbourne's north, we have a 18-hole golf voucher to give away.
Give us
his thoughts on the tribunal. Here's this bloke.
Oh, the post is broken. Matthews hit it. Oh, talk about a He-Man.
How many weeks did you get for recklessly breaking that post, Lee?
not enough. Oh, it must have been a lot because I didn't do it again. How are you, Sam? G'day, Jared. Yeah, it's really interesting times. There's the whole system interests me. And as you mentioned, Jared, there's a long, long way between careless and intentional, isn't it?
Yep.
In terms of an act. And it's funny, I looked at these incidents and I thought Long, he bumped sort of with his hip. Now, I know it was a high bump and you're going to get suspended for that, but I thought the other three, and that was the Shield one, the Ebert one, and even the Rowan one, they were all basically shoulders to the other guy's head, which is like a bump, you can bump to the body, we know that. But as soon as you choose to use your shoulder or your hip in the case of Long as a weapon, then you're liable. And then it's only a question of penalty. So I thought if in terms of what I would say, deliberately rough, I thought Long was the least of them because it was a different tie. Like he sort of went in sideways, his hip hit the other bloke's head. Yeah, he's liable. But the one thing I hope, Jared, I hope the human element of the tribunal is not hamstrung by the table.
I don't think it is. It's not supposed to be. I mean, they can use it as a reference and as a guide if they're deliberating on penalty, but it certainly doesn't interfere with their verdict of guilty or not.
Well, I would have, that's what I mean. I thought the Scheel, Ebert, and Rowan ones were almost, they were just the same. They were the guy saw the other guy at the last moment, braced himself, his shoulder hit the other guy's head, so Shields ends up with 2 weeks, Ebert 1 week, and Rowan gets off completely.
Yeah, the only thing
I'd argue against
Lee is that because Darcy had his head over the ball, he was in that most vulnerable position. If he had had his head slightly further vertical or slightly more up, and he gets hit on the crown of the head, that's when you get the spinal injuries. And that's why I'm so, I guess, sensitized or sensitive to that particular bump. I think we've seen it over the years. It got really hammered some years ago and it was almost taken out of the game. And yet it just seems to be sneaking back in. So 3 weeks is probably, in my view, hopefully a warning to everybody else that the next one that comes up should be 5 or more.
Just on the Shield one, which is coming up at 6:30, so it'll start in 20 minutes from now. If they successfully downgrade that from high impact to medium impact, I think that'll confuse a lot of people because Curtis Taylor, although he came back on, he spent 25 minutes off the ground and had to be basically helped from the ground by trainers. So if that doesn't constitute high impact, yep, they're going to leave themselves a bit vulnerable going forward. And just some really bad news, and I hate talking about Joe Danaher when it's in this light. He has gone down again. Essendon announcing that in his rehabilitation skills session on the weekend, he felt some soreness in his calf. They had it scanned yesterday, which confirmed a minor calf strain. He'll be off running for 10 to 14 days. So
minor setback. You have to look at this in the bigger picture. Like, given 2 weeks, he's been out for nearly 2 years. So a minor setback. You're always going to have these little soft tissue injuries when you're up your training. But
Jared, would that be related at all?
No, just that he's trying to increase the tempo of his training. He's been so detrained over a period of time that you're going to have these soft tissue injuries.
Would you think that he's still some chance of playing this year?
Well, it'd have to be some chance. If he's getting back to training where he's doing calf muscles, then I think it's a positive and a touch scary, Lee, given how Essendon are going right now.
Well, yes. I mean, that's being under-trained, isn't it, in a way? I mean, you miss a lot of footy because you're injured. Your body's not conditioned. And then different parts of your body play up. And you think Joe Danaher is very much in that category. Jared, can I take you back to the tribunal?
Yep.
Now, why do we bother having three?
We've just lost Lee there. We're having a few gremlins in the system. I assume, I don't want to speak for the great man, is he going to ask about the three different categories or what they were with Adrian Anderson?
No, I don't think he was going to ask that, but we'll get back to Lee Matthews as soon as we can.
We should go back to Reckless.
13 13 32 is the number, 13 13 32. Before Eddie joins us, I can tell you that Eddie Betts has kicked 299 goals for Carlton. He's the third player in history when he kicks 5 on the weekend to kick 300 goals for two clubs. 13, 13, 32.
Say that again, Jared. He's the third player in history.
The third player in history he will become to kick 300 goals for two clubs when he gets his 300th goal on the weekend.
So one other would be Franklin?
13, 13, 32. Do you want to get the 18-hole golf voucher to Mandalay Scoop? If you can tell me who the other one is, Buddy Franklin and somebody, 13, 13, 32. Eddie Betts joins us on the line. Welcome to you, Eddie. And it was just fantastic watching you and the Blues on Sunday night.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me. It was a lot of fun. We didn't play well the week before, so we knew we had to come out and start well and, building up, moving up into the Queensland. It was a different, training venue, but the boys embraced it. We had a good week of training and we started well and we finished well, which is good.
Very few people have kicked more goals than you, Eddie. The bloke that's just rejoining us was one of those, Lee Matthews, with Eddie Betts.
G'day, Eddie. How are you? I must say, for any small forward like yourself, Eddie, for your big forwards, you want them to mark it, have a set shot at goal, but don't let the opposition mark it. And that seemed like what Mackay and Casbold and McGovern, they made sure the ball either got marked by them or it came to the ground for you.
Yeah, they are. They're starting to play some great footy. I mean, Levi's shown that all season. He's had a good pre-season, and he's competing well. He's clanking them and he's kicking straight, which is fantastic as well, big Levi. And it's good for those guys to, clank them, but as smalls, I'd probably want them to bring it to ground and drop it a few times. But, we pride ourselves and our compete in our contest down forward, and we don't like, guys like Easternwood, or Ace Cordy, intercepting those marks. So it's good that those guys can either clank them or bring it to ground.
Eddie.
Sorry, go, Lee.
I got to say, Eddie, I saw the eighth game of the round, which was the seven-goal game at the Gabba early in the afternoon, and you got your game was 23 goals. Do you suspect that when the two teams or the two games ran out on the field, that you're thinking that the game's going to be played differently, or is it like just sometimes the randomness of it, these things just transpire?
No, I think they just transpire. And I guess, you know, you've got to look at the weather as well. It played a big factor in that. It was a bit chewy and it rained early on. And we knew that it was all about territory. There was no mucking around with the footy. Let's get it down forward. Let's get it to us and press the game and lock it in our forward half. And that's what we did. And I think we played that a bit better during the game. We got control of it. We got it forward and we scored, which was fantastic. Bulldogs got a run on, I think, in that second quarter. And it was good for us to, you know, not really let them score more than three or four goals, which what happened against Geelong, I think. You know, Geelong scored five in a row and came back at us. But it was good to finish off the game strong.
Eddie, it's great to have you on. When Carlton officials recruited you, they talked about what you'd bring off the field as much as on. What do you think you've been bringing to some of your younger, more inexperienced Carlton teammates that isn't necessarily on the footy field?
To be honest, for me personally, I'm more like a playing coach in a way. I like to, and we're talking on the field, off field more so. I'm a family man. I spend most times, you know, at home looking after four kids, and it's hard. Like, you know, I go into the footy club, I spend my time with the boys, but then I head off home and then I'm a dad. But to be honest, when I get to the ground, you know, these young boys, they want to learn, they want to get better and they want to take the club, you know, into finals, hopefully. So they like to learn and I'm there to help them and guide them in a sense and, you know, pass on my knowledge, if you want to say it in that way.
You picked up a couple of recruits. Pitnett in the ruck has been absolutely superb. He's a big unit.
Yeah, he is. And there's no mucking around with big Pitto. He, before the game, I tried some, you know, jokes with him, get him up and about. And I'm like, how you going, Pitto? He's like, I'm in a mood tonight. And like, you just know that he's switched on. And, you know, and I said to him, yeah, okay. He goes, yep, I'll play well this week. You know, and he's always wanting to better each week, which is fantastic. And then, you know, we get Jack Martin, who basically is dominating every week, which is fantastic.
So Mark's not laughing at your jokes. Are your jokes all right?
My jokes are funny. I'm laughing at my own jokes.
Okay.
He's looking at me, but he switched on. He had a laugh, but he switched on, which is good. So it's good to have. Good to know.
Well, it's been a fascinating turnaround. There's a lot of Carlton supporters that aren't quite convinced about where you're going. But, gee, I've seen you beat Geelong and I've seen you take out the Bulldogs on the weekend.
Essendon.
You've taken out the Bombers. Probably an excuse there for the Bombers, given that they missed a week. But nevertheless, you're in the eight and there's a lot of organic improvement still to come, Eddie.
Yeah, there is. And, you know, I didn't even know that, you know, this was Carlton's first time being in the eight since 2013. The boys are not fussed by that. You know, like we said, we're taking it week after week and we're just trying to earn some respect in the league, you know, and we just want to play some good footy week in and week out. And wherever we end up at the end of the season, that's where we deserve to be. But like we said, we're just trying to earn some respect from all the other teams and play some good footy.
You've played in some powerful sides. You played in a grand final side for the Adelaide Crows. How far away do you think you are at the Blue Land?
Well, you know, we've got some high-end talent and these young guys, they want to take this club forward. And, you know, I think, you know, just we can match it with the best when we play our best footy, but I think it's the consistency lapses. So, you know, each week we're not going to play the best footy like we did on the weekend, but, you know, if the effort's there, the intent's there and we play our brand of footy, I think that's all we can ask of this team. And we're playing some exciting footy. And wherever it takes us, you know, hopefully it will take us further than where we want to be. I don't know, to be honest, but we're heading in the right direction. For all those Carlton fans out there, we're heading in the right direction.
And your new teammate, Jack Martin, I've got to say, at the Suns, it never occurred to me he was such a good overhead mark. It's a good, strong body-to-body mark. Did you know that was within his game?
No, we didn't. And you know, speaking to a lot of the players here, because Jack came in and he, you know, marked his mark straight away because he came in, his intensity, he's hard. He's like, he's not even that built. Like, he's kind of thin built, but his tackling is really tough and he's a great overhead mark. And none of us knew that because, obviously, we didn't really watch a lot of Gold Coast play back in the day, and you know, he surprised a lot of us players. And like you said, he's great overhead. We can put him in the midfield. We can put him on the wing. And he played a few games, I think, at Gold Coast down at the halfback flank. So we can put him anywhere, and you know, he can get his job done, which is good to have.
Eddie, speaking of the Gold Coast, as we let you go, Jared and I are speaking to Isaac Rankin later in the show, the Gold Coast rising star for round six. Did you catch much of his debut, Eddie? Because it was pretty hard to miss.
I think I want to watch Gold Coast now because of Isaac, because they're absolutely dominating, and he's an absolute star. I actually spoke to Nev Jetta after the game, and I said, Nev, how is he? And Nev goes, he's an absolute superstar, and he's hard. He's got that stat. We always knew he was going to be a superstar, but to see him debut like that is unbelievable. And I'm going to try recruit him to Carlton.
he's going to turn recruit. Well, Eddie, go on, Jared.
Well, you got Jack Martin there as one. You can throw Isaac in the other forward pocket.
And Tom Papley as well. I might have to sneak in.
I'm not sure how mate Tony would be all that happy with that.
I'm happy to give my jersey up, Isaac. I'll retire straight away and give Isaac a number 19, and he can come and dominate for the Blues.
Well, before you retire, Eddie, you're going to become the third player in history to kick 300 goals for two clubs. We're looking forward to the celebration on the weekend. Thanks for joining us, and good luck.
Thanks, guys. How much do I need?
Just one more. You're on 299 for the Blues.
Okay, one more. I'll give him my best go.
Eddie Betts there is going to become in the record books when he kicks. It's a phenomenal stat. And Jared, you talked about, you know, the last time the Blues were in the eight was 2013. Eddie was in the team there.
That's amazing.
So in between Carlton being in the eight, Eddie's gone to another club, kicked 300 goals, played in the grand final and come back.
I'll tell you what, if they beat Port Adelaide this round, then the membership will go through the roof. Kia offers value you can trust in Australia's best seven-year warranty across the entire Kia range. This is Sports Day. We're powered by a 100% Australian electricity and gas retailer. That's Red Energy. Switch today. And I reckon our next guest, Brett Ratton, would have hoped that they would have had a little bit more electricity after quarter time. He joins us after the break. Welcome back to Sports Day. We're here for Red Energy, born and bred in Melbourne. That's Red Energy and Kia with Australia's best seven-year factory warranty. Well, the Saints right now are seventh on the ladder with three wins and three losses. They're one game off fourth. They're one game off 14th in the space of half a dozen weeks. Brett Ratton has enjoyed some of the great joys of victory and some of the great pains of throwing away wins when they were a few goals or more up at quarter time. He joins us on the line. Welcome to you, Brett. There's been some good and some bad, but ultimately the good outweighs the bad at the moment.
Yeah, g'day, Jared. It's pretty frustrating. I think when you set the first quarter up like we did and then to get the result after quarter time, it really went Fremantle's way, and they controlled the game until probably the last maybe 8 minutes when we got some momentum back in the game. But to be up in, six goals and have the game where we wanted it, and then, you know, really with Fife going down and a few injuries, it was, just reminded us so much of the North Melbourne game.
And Rats, learning from those experiences, I mean, what was the why? I mean, you sort of in your review process of why did the such a good start and then such a bad middle part of the game?
Yeah, it's probably a couple of things, Lee. There's probably two parts to it. Our greatest strength has been our offense, but, you know, really in that second quarter, it was our ability to kick the ball out of our defensive 50, and we just gave the ball back and gave them, I suppose, some scoreboard, ascendancy or field position because we couldn't get the ball, and we were trying to be maybe too creative in that space when we need to be a bit more patient in the game and just really control the game and, you know, not take a high-risk kick when we don't need to and just take the bailout. And if we lose it from there, we can defend that play. But then the last part of the second quarter was a lot around the stoppages. And when you're sort of losing stoppages at times, it can be an attitudinal thing, especially when the numbers are pretty even. And I think we've tried some things structurally, but I think this game really showed us, we can tap into more, I suppose, the mental approach when teams are coming at us. It might not be around the structure and a seventh and an extra up at the stoppage. It might be that we need to go into sort of this mental space and really try and get the game back on our terms.
Now, I've got to say, B, I knew you were at Noosa, and I was watching the game, and I was thinking, I wonder if you guys knew how far it was from Noosa to the Gold Coast when you decided to go to the hub, because when you were struggling, I thought, how long did the bus trip take you, by the way? And when you were struggling middle of the game, I thought maybe that was one of the reasons you'd lost your energy.
Yeah, and, you know, there's no doubt that we looked flat. You know, the things that we did in the first quarter with, you know, break perimeter and things when we had the ball, and we weren't doing that. And, you know, then you start to question. I thought it was more the mind than probably the body. It took us about 2 hours 50 to get down and about the same to get home after the game. So that's not an excuse. It's where we put up. You know, there's some great advantages being here. And if we've got to travel on a bus, it's no excuse for us. And, yeah, that's the disappointing part. It would have been, you know, an amazing bus trip on the way back if we would have done the job, but we end up just pretty much looking at each other and wondering what if, and, you know, we want to change that. That's not the way we want to go about it in our footy, and we've done a bit of work and had some really good chats, and I suppose this hub environment allows us to do that. So it's been really good to debrief this game and really dig a lot deeper on what are we going to do next. And it might only be that we're in this sort of, you know, team coming at us, or it might be for us to come at teams. So it's been a good conversation.
Jared, the long bus ride home sort of puts you in the perspective of some of the fans, doesn't it? Like, if you're a family going to the footy,
yeah,
the car ride home's the best part if you're listening to the radio callers talk about the win, but pretty tough if you have a loss.
It wouldn't have been all that pleasant. The bus ride home after a win, though, I'm not sure if it you would have broken rank and got a couple of dozen bottles for the boys on the way home, Rats, but I guess you didn't have to answer that question.
No, it was even my birthday, Jared, so it was like a double whammy, but yeah, it was disappointing. And you know, we've played some very good footy through, you know, this season, but they're the ones that sit you know, and really churn at you when you think, geez, what we could have done. But as a group, we've got to become better at this, and you know, teams are going to come at us. A lot of teams and a lot of games have been, you know, really swinging with momentum. You look at sort of the Brisbane Geelong game. You could name a heap of games that, you know, teams have really come at teams late, and it's your ability to, you know, mentally, physically get the job done, and that's what we're trying to make sure that this group does.
I'm going to keep examining the bus trip with Lee Matthews afterwards. I'm just wondering what his theory is, given it had a latent period of about 35 minutes. The flatness, but I reckon sometimes the lack of accuracy in front of goal can rob you of your energy. And you missed about four genuine, easy shots in front of goal in that second term, which would have blown the Dockers off the park.
Yeah, it would have. It's, I suppose, that, you know, they're the things that you sort of chat about as well, the missed opportunities to do what you want to do. And we have been accurate in front of goals, and that was just a period that we were poor. But yeah, we're creating some good shots in that, but really to give up, you know, 36 inside 50s and 16 shots at goal after quarter time is really the defensive work that we did in the game. And we did have some offensive opportunities, but defensively we have to get you know, better in this space, and that's what we'll be working on.
Brett, you hinted at some tough love at the selection table this week. What areas of the ground will you look to sharpen up?
Oh, there's a few things that we sort of started with match committee, and you know, we've gone through I suppose a pretty good review with the players, and really trying to get the honesty about their performance, and you know, and not just the players. It's, you know, sometimes what is happening on the field is a reflection of what the bench is like and what the box is like as well. So when we do review this stuff, it's not just about the players, it's everybody takes accountability in this space. So, yeah, we've gone through that, and there will be some changes. You know, Benny's out now for 3 weeks, so that'll give somebody an opportunity, and then, you know, we'll just have a look at some of the other spots. But, yeah, there's some players in really good form in you know, in the scratch matches, in, you know, Sinclair, Burns, Ryder, Savage has been good form, Bytel, Roberton. So we've got some players to think about, and their names have been bandied around already.
Bottom line, Rats, you kicked 11 goals, and I think it's only about three or four times this year a team's kicked 10 goals and lost. So on that basis, at least you must have thought you weren't too far away.
Yeah, we did it all in the first league with seven, so it was pretty hard struggle after that. But you know, we've sort of acknowledged what we can do well, but we actually have to acknowledge when it's not going our way, how do we stem that flow? And that's really what we've put a fair bit of energy in about how we can do that. And, you know, we've strategised a bit more about what we can do from the coach's box as well to support the players on field and give them some extra tools to maybe shape what we're doing as well. So that's important.
So what's the travelling circumstances this week? You've got Adelaide in Adelaide and then you've got Port for memory. Do you stay in Adelaide or are you going back to Noosa?
No, we are going back to Noosa and then we travel down on the Saturday morning with Essendon, stay overnight in Adelaide and then come home with Essendon after their game, which they play, they'll be sort of finished around 4:30, 5 o'clock on Sunday afternoon. So we'll be in Adelaide, not this weekend, but the following for sort of the Saturday, Sunday. And, yeah, we'll be just straight down there on Monday and, play the game and come back on Tuesday morning. So, yeah, I don't know if we've got the opportunity to stay there. It does get a bit more complicated with, you know, all this COVID and, we're just doing what we're told from the AFL, which we're happy to do that.
One more for me, Rat. Now, I said on this program last week, I'd love to say it was an exciting, high-scoring thriller, which is really what your game was. But as a coach, have you got any feel about, like, the game's good to watch or is it totally about the scoreboard, which normally what coaching's all about?
Yeah, I'm with you with the scoreboard. You know, as long as your nose is in front by the end, that's the main thing. But I think you sort of do look at, you know, what you're trying to do offensively and what you're trying to do defensively. So, you know, we probably, as you mentioned, we kicked enough score to win that game, but we didn't deny the opposition scoreboard pressure back the other way, and they got their opportunity. So I'd rather not be in the you know, the category of we're an excitement machine and we've got great entertaining games. It's about us winning 4 points. And if we can play good football and play it on our terms, that's a bonus. But, to sit there and say, yeah, we both kicked a really good score, but, yeah, we should have been able to defend that score as well.
None of the coaches have publicly been whinging. Everybody's been really positive, and I think ultimately that's the only approach given that nothing's not much is going to change. But can you tell me, Rats, how many cylinders, if the machine of St Kilda is a six-cylinder motor, how many cylinders are you running on at the present time by way of preparation leading into a game?
I suppose what I would say is all areas of your program are compromised.
Yep.
Because of training together, even some of the, you know, the weight sessions and what you can do and things like that. So we're probably at about four, you would say, Jared.
Yep.
You know, we don't really get a lot of team training together with contact. So they're the things that we've got to compromise. The great thing is all the other teams are doing the same. So it's what mm-hmm. it is for us, it is for them. So it's no, there's no advantage or disadvantage. I think that's probably just some of the challenges of you know, the program and everybody in the program to accept that because we're sort of used to the normal. This is what we could do. Now this is what we have to do. And just adjusting to that's really important.
Brett, we always love having you on. Appreciate it, even after a loss. Happy birthday, by the way, for the weekend and good luck for the rest of the year.
Oh, yeah.
How many years now?
One off the half century, Jared. So okay.
Oh, you're only a pup. Yeah, you're only a pup.
Yeah.
Wish I was 50 again.
No worries. Well, thanks for having us, guys.
Yeah, terrific, thanks, Brett, Rats. And good luck with the Saints. It's a really interesting ladder, Lee. The Saints, they're in seventh, one game off fourth and one game off 14th. Very, very tight at the top and at the bottom.
Where would they be, Jared, if they had have beaten the Dockers as they should have?
Well, if they'd have beaten the Dockers, they would have been equal fourth.
Equal fourth, okay.
And if they had have beaten the Dockers and the Kangaroos, given they were six goals up both games, they would be equal top. So everybody's going to have their losses, but you've got to keep. But you got to win when you're six goals up. There's no doubt about that.
Now, time for news headlines with Tony Tardio. It's all for Urban Alley, Australian-made hand sanitizer, available now
nose.
At urbanalley.com.au.
It is that time. Time for a reading from the Gospel according to Lethal Lee Matthews, and he's here thanks to McDonald's, Macca's drive-thru, fast, safe, contact-free. And we begin our first reading tonight, to Lee, examining a couple of coaching conundrums that came out of round six.
Well, I did. Well, the conundrum being there's no definitive answer. That's what the word conundrum means to me. Now, let's go back to the Sunday afternoon game that there's been much spoken of, the Richmond Swans game. Now, I went to the footy.
Yep.
I've been watching so much footy on the television like we all have. I thought I'll drive down to the Gabba, only 5 minutes away from the Gabba, to watch the Richmond Swans game. Yep. I only lasted till half time.
You were lucky.
I went home, right?
Yep.
So I actually, what I want to talk about,
though,
is
Why did you go home, by the way?
It was dull.
Right.
It was 3-2. There was no noise. There was no atmosphere. There was 2,000 or 3,000 people there, but there was just no atmosphere and no excitement in the game. So I just went home because, to be honest, you get a better view of it on TV because the TV cameras take you closer to the action you do when you're sort of sitting in the stand.
And anyway, there's crowd noise.
And there's crowd noise. And the commentators do make it exciting. But it was more about the Longmire-Hardwick. Like, clearly, about halfway through the first quarter, Richmond were 3 in front, bang, bang, bang. And that would look like it was going to be a 10-goal win to Richmond. So just shortly after that, John Longmire decided, OK, if his opponent goes up for you, Callum Mills, you become our general in the back 50. And it works superbly. From that point of view, like when you think of it, for the Swans to get within 8 points, and Blakey had a shot late in the game to get within 2 points, if the coach is responsible, that was a magnificent coaching performance. But what I was really interested in is in after the game, I reckon there's a little bit of guilty conscience amongst coaches about where modern coaching has taken the game. So I reckon when it was ends up being a 7-goal game, I mean, it's 7 goals, 18. So it was a very inaccurate game. That's what really made it worse. Ball didn't go back to the centre too often. But basically when the game itself wasn't too good, all of a sudden Damien Hardwick felt like he needed to get it off his chest and pop it out. But then the following day, of course, John Longmire didn't like being blamed for the style of game. So I reckon in the two hats that coaches wear, they've got the conundrum. They want to win. Clearly, that's the most thing they want to do. But they'd like to do it with some attacking flair if that's possible. So it was almost like a guilty conscience from both Longmire and Hardwick about this conundrum of, yes, we want to win the game. That's really 99% of our job. But as football people, yeah, we'd like to have a more attacking game style as well.
Yep.
So, hey, wasn't my fault. It was his fault, right?
A bit of finger pointing.
That was one coaching conundrum that really hit me. The other one was to do with Alistair Clarkson. And it's very rare for someone to teach a club for a long period of time. Like Kevin Sheedy is the role model. Sheedy finished in 2007, as we know, after 27 straight seasons at Essendon. Clarko is now in his 16th season at Hawthorn. Now both of them, Sheedy's had a couple of fantastic eras, mid-80s, 90, 93, then 2000, 2001, that kind of era.
Yep.
And then all of a sudden, when Sheeds and Essendon's team under Sheeds dropped out of the final four contention for, say, 6 years, then eventually Sheeds got pushed out. I don't think Sheeds went voluntarily. I think he needed to be pushed out. It becomes really, really nasty when a premiership icon type coach needs to be pushed out of the footy club. Now, I don't know where this is going to end for Alistair Clarkson, because the conundrum for Clarko and Hawthorn for that matter, when's the right time to finish? And do you know when it's the right time? The answer is usually no. And mostly you need to be pushed. So it's an interesting thing. Clarko, like Sheeds, had been to the top of Mount Everest. What Clarko did with the team in the early, like, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, that era, and 18 was just...
We'll continue with the Gospel reading according to Matthews after this. Welcome back to Sports Day as we continue a reading from the Gospel according to Matthews. Lee, you were just talking about Alistair Clarkson and when is the right time to go.
Well, that's the conundrum. There is no right time. I was just to say, when I was coaching, you'd love to have a supreme coaching god that you could check in with to ask those kind of questions. Have I still got it within me? Have I still got the enthusiasm? Am I still being listened to? That's why this is a conundrum. There's no right or wrong answer. The one thing you know is eventually Clarko will finish coaching at Hawthorn. He might go for 30 years and supersede Sheeds. Who knows? But the point is, it's a very difficult situation that applies when the icon coach has been there a long, long time, when the question clearly has to be asked, at what point is the time come to finish?
Lee, I want to ask you about Gill's charter and how it applied to the Tim O'Brien tackle that we displayed on the couch last night where he was buried.
Oh, yeah. I couldn't believe I saw that. I mean, he just was piled into the back, into the ground, face first by two Collingwood players. And then one of the Collingwood players, shoved the ball back underneath Tim O'Brien. I thought, and who got a hold in the ball against him. And I thought to myself, this is where the umpire's attitude is being led by their coaches, by what they're being asked to do. That the thought of actually giving an obvious free kick for in the back wasn't even thought about. Oh, but I'll give him a holding the ball when the ball gets stuck under him. I thought that was really, really disturbing. I saw it on the last night. I remember mate noting when I saw it live, Jared. I thought, how the hell could an umpire miss that kind of so obvious in the back? Because in the backs are being missed so often that clearly it's just this is just an extreme version of it.
We're 2 weeks into the law reinterpretation, Lee. I'll read you out the law. According to the rule book of 1978, and that is the holding the ball rule, the law permits the player who is first to gain possession of the ball time to dispose of it by kicking or handball. Therefore, an opponent who dwells on a player and holds him immediately he obtains possession of the ball should not gain the benefit of a split-second decision for holding the ball. The player must be given a reasonable time to dispose of the ball. And I think nothing much has changed except we are now not applying that leniency to the bloke who wins the ball. And we're dangerous territory where I've seen Adam Treloar and Joel Selwood in the last 2 weeks, Selwood last week and Treloar the week before, just sweat off a little bit where normally these ball instinctive players would have gone for the ball, preferring now to tackle.
Well, if you talk about what happens, if you're actually going to get pinged for grabbing possession of it and getting tackled and you can't do anything with it and you get pinged for holding the ball, well, then you've got a decision to make. Do I just not take possession? And it seems like people are quite happy with that. People are quite happy to, well, some people, fans, commentators, clearly at the AFL a bit that way too, they're quite happy to make the game easier for the tackler by really encouraging the player under pressure, don't take possession.
But the obvious conundrum, Lee, to finish on your magnificent sporting word, is what do we do when we get to a point where the ball's in the middle of two players and neither player wants to pick it up?
Well, the, as you said, it's easy for people to say, oh, that's 1978. The rule, I think, might not have actually altered it. The interpretation of it may well have altered. But that's sad, isn't it? Isn't it sad for the game where the desperation to get your hands on the footy is tempered by the fact if, oh, no, that's too easy for the tackler to nab me, so I'll let him go and I might think about going there second. I mean, that is diabolical for the sport, in my view. But some people seem to be supporting that point of view.
Appreciate your time, Lee. Look forward to speaking to
Thanks, Lee.
Through the week.
Nice. Lee Matthews there for Macca's. Sports Day powered by Red Energy, real Aussie energy. And Kia, Australia's best year, 7-year factory warranty. Now, Dylan Sheil is contesting on two arguments his two-week ban. One being the impact should be medium and not high, as well as exceptional and compelling circumstances due to his clean record in the AFL.
Well, I don't mind the exceptional and compelling circumstance. He has got a clean record, but who knows what medium is when you're dealing with concussion?
Yep, and you'll never guess it, Jared, but they have brought up, Adrian Anderson, who's defending him, has brought up the 2017 prelim hit Cochin on Sheil.
Don't blame him.
They're trying to use it the other way.
Oh, boy.
I reckon it stays at two.
Sports Day for Kia's open season. On now with match-winning deals. And Red Energy, a 100% Australian electricity and gas retailer.
Welcome back to Sports Day. We're here for Wilson Homes, who make homes that have got great designs, so you love being home. You
can join us. Or homes?
That is homes.
Oh, I see.
We do not hone in this radio program. We home in, thanks to Wilson Homes. You can join us on Sports Day. Thanks to Harcourt's the great real estate operation. And the open line is 13 13 32. You can talk to us about sport. You can talk real estate to them. Speak to the experts at Harcourts. 13 13 32. Scoop.
Yes.
The Gold Coast Suns are now out of the eight. You've got the Giants out of the eight. Mm. Of all the coaches, I suspect Leon Cameron right now is the most under the pump.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, he has probably got the least amount of excuses as to why his side would be where they are as compared to everyone else.
What's his first excuse, if he's got one?
Nothing that no one else would be going through. They've had almost a full book of players to pick from. They just haven't been playing well enough. I did get home and I turned on the couch mainly to see your opener about the
Jibber Jabber. Do you like the Jibber Jabber at the Gabba?
Went down very well in the Richmond household.
Oh, that's good.
But I also watched Tom Morris report about Stephen Cornelio
that was a bit explosive.
Being under the pump, which was an excellent story.
He got smashed a bit by social media, but social I noticed media nobody actually came out and said it was wrong.
No, I think Phil Davis addressed it today. And
what
and,
do you have to say?
Well, he just backed in his captain, as you would expect any teammate to do. But look, I would think it's unlikely that he's going to be dropped. I mean, that's a big call. But what Tom said was that he's under the pump and he's fighting for his place. And anyone that's been watching the Giants over the last few weeks, no one would refute that, Jared. He's shockingly out of form.
Yep, and I noticed when Hutchie put up a graphic, or it might have been Lloydie, that the focus of attention was on Steve Cornelio.
Yeah.
So quite clearly there's some murmurings around the football world that Steve's not playing anywhere near where he should be.
It'd be great to talk to Steve about it. I mean, this is a, you know, Jared, you want a Brownlow. You were out of form for a patch of time. I'm sure there were periods.
Absolutely.
And it happens to the best of us. And his has just come at a time when he's just become captain and he's just signed essentially his life away to the club.
Yep.
In a great show of loyalty, by the way. Now, they have it all might not have anything to do with one another, but on the surface, it just looks like he's struggling.
Yeah, I don't combine poor form with captaincy. I don't think he's been in the job long enough for it. But if he's changed his attitude, then maybe he's trying to run around and look after everybody else's game rather than looking after his own game.
Well, like little things like getting other guys to toss the coin. Now, again, I'm not trying to add it all together, but I'm just wondering.
Yeah, that was a bit smarty pants.
Has the captaincy made him think about things differently?
That was inference from Hutchie last night. That was a strong inference. I hadn't heard that.
Hutchie was pretty brutal on the Giants, but he has been.
He has been consistently. He has. But he was strong on Cornelio, saying that he had started to almost say get ahead of himself, just to paraphrase, to a large degree, and worrying about the wider things, etc. But ultimately, I mean, not everybody has come off this break in great form. They haven't come off the break in great form. So they fell over the line against Collingwood.
Mm.
They've had a win. They've had a loss or two. And they're not playing great footy. I mean, they are just not getting the ball inside forward 50. Right now, if you put up the profile of 12 of the last 13 premiership winners, they are nothing like that profile. They just aren't getting the ball inside their forward 50. Their differential off turnover is one of the key components of the premiership sides, that you must outscore your side on turnover. And they cannot score on turnover as a reflection of their talent level.
Here is what Hutchie's had to say on Footy Classified last night.
3-3, the Giants, almost in my mind at the absolute intersection between success and failure in this year. They've got to get it together in the next couple of weeks. They've still obviously got the talent to win a flag, but if they fall away, Lotto, it's going to be a fair fallout in giant land. I think too, Caro, the era of Leon Cameron is going to be defined in the next 6 weeks. It's either going to be a great success and they're going to get their act together and get a run at a premiership, or it's going to be a failed year and another missed moment. And if they miss too many moments with this list, trying to keep that talent together is going to be a big challenge. This year, they've got to be top four and contend again.
Do you agree, Jared, that it comes down to the next 6 weeks?
No, I thought at the time, it comes down to the next 3 months. It comes down to this year.
Yeah, I agree, because so much changes week to week that
ultimately, unless he wins a flag, he's going to be considered a failure. That's the bottom line with that particular side. He knew probably when he took over.
Yeah.
It's a very talented list. It's not as talented as it potentially was in 2016 when they had their best opportunity. Should have won the flag that year, missed out. Mm. But they have got enough talent. But it's the numbers. It's the way they're playing. It's the numbers. The numbers tell you that there's a way to win a flag right now, and that is to a sustainable brand of footy, get the ball inside your forward 50, press up and create goals from forward 50 chains, and they're not doing that.
Do you think ultimately the switch will be flicked?
I've got no idea about that. That's a very, very good question. Who knows? I mean, they switched it last year. They weren't playing great footy last year.
No.
Came into the finals, I think, in seventh position and ended up making the grand final. Had a great September, but it was a three-week September and they needed 4 weeks.
Yeah, then so they ran out of gas.
They ran out of players that were fit and healthy. So they've got a better side, much better side this year. They've got the Ward back. They've got another ruckman, backup ruckman.
Jacobs, yep.
They've got a couple of kids who've got a little bit more experience into the side. Taranto comes back. Oh, I mean, they are chock
full.
How
big an in is Taranto?
Taranto's massive. And I just, that was what Tom Morris was saying, that the pressure is coming because somebody has to give way. I suspect it'll be someone like a Haitley.
Or Green.
Or Tom Green. I'm not sure. I didn't see Tom's work on the weekend, but
he's quiet. You know, okay. 7 or 8 touches. You love Haitley, don't you? Is Haitley the one, or is the Ash is the one that you'd be
on? Yeah, Lockie Ash is my man.
they got so many top 10 picks coming out of
there. There you go. They picked up Tom Green and Lockie Ash. They are top teners. Amazing picks.
Yep.
So they're set up for more than one crack, but you know the captain's got to come to the fore because he is, you know, arguably an All-Australian midfielder, and he's playing in the forward line.
In 30 seconds, Jared, you're at the Magpies selection table committee next to Nathan Buckley and Jeff Walsh.
Yep.
It's going to be wet against Geelong in WA on Thursday. Are you picking Mason Cox, or are you picking Cameron to replace him, or are you picking neither of them and going small with Dugowie and Majacek?
Probably go Dugowie and Majacek.
Okay.
I'm not sure. In fact, I'm sure the one missing element of Cox's game right now is a second effort.
Yep.
And I've been a big fan of his and supporter right throughout the dark years. And the other stuff is on the ground. I think he's very clever with his feet, taps the ball on, knocks it on with his feet, etc. But I reckon that you've got to learn from the Bulldogs and that Shacky couldn't get near it in the wet. So don't play anybody who struggles in the wet. And I reckon there's only one exception to that, and that was the Blues on the weekend because their three talls, they played like it was a dry day.
You picked up in that game a great, you talk about kick-ons and knock-ons. Remember the Michael Gibbons?
Oh,
little,
that was a ripper. I wanted to play it on the couch last night. I got outvoted.
What do you mean you got outvoted?
Outvoted.
It's the dictatorship, the couch.
Democracy.
It's not a democracy.
It's changed, unfortunately.
It's a geocracy.
It's
going to
change back,
be.
But it's a geocracy. I like that.
This is Sports Day for Wilson Homes. Chat with one of their friendly staff today about personalising a home design to suit your individual lifestyle. We might have to get Michael Gibbons on Sports Day soon. Isaac Rankin, speaking of rising stars, he's going to join us this hour. Don't go anywhere. Welcome back to Sports Day. It's all for Wilson Homes. They believe in great design, so you love being home. Earlier tonight, Jared, myself and Lee, we caught up with St Kilda coach Brett Ratten, whose Saints hubbed up in Noosa are now South Australia bound for some Monday night football against the Crows in round 7. Here he is.
Well, the Saints right now are 7th on the ladder with 3 wins and 3 losses. They're 1 game off 4th. They're 1 game off 14th in the space of half a dozen weeks. Brett Ratten has enjoyed some of the great joys of victory and some of the great pains of throwing away wins when they were a few goals or more up at quarter time. He joins us on the line. Welcome to you, Brett. There's been some good and some bad, but ultimately the good outweighs the bad at the moment.
Yeah, g'day, Jared. It's pretty frustrating. I think when you set the first quarter up like we did and then to get the result after quarter time, it really went Fremantle's way and they controlled the game until probably the last maybe 8 minutes when we got some momentum back in the game. But to be up in, by 6 goals and have the game where we wanted it and then, really with 5 going down and a few injuries, it was, just reminded us so much of the North Melbourne game.
And Rats, learning from those experiences, I mean, what was the why? I mean, you're sort of in your review process of why did such a good start and then such a bad middle part of the game?
Yeah, it's probably a couple of things, Lee. There's probably 2 parts to it. Our greatest strength has been our offence, but, really in that second quarter, it was our ability to kick the ball out of our defensive 50, and we just gave the ball back and gave them, I suppose, some scoreboard ascendancy or field position because we couldn't get the ball and we were trying to be maybe too creative in that space when we need to be a bit more patient in the game and just really control the game and, you know, not take a high-risk kick when we don't need to and just take the bailout. And if we lose it from there, we can defend that play. But then the last part of the second quarter was a lot around the stoppages. And when you're sort of losing stoppages at times, it can be an attitudinal thing, especially when the you know, the numbers are pretty even. And I think we've tried some things structurally, but I think this game really showed us you know, we can tap into more, I suppose, the mental approach when teams are coming at us. It might not be around the structure and a seventh and an extra up at the stoppage. It might be that we need to go into sort of this mental space and really try and get the game back on our terms.
Now, I've got to say, B, I knew you at Noosa, and I was watching the game, and I was thinking, I wonder if you guys knew how far it was from Noosa to the Gold Coast when you decided to go to the hub, because when you were struggling, I thought, well, how long did the bus trip take you, by the way? And when you were struggling middle of the game, I thought maybe that was one of the reasons you'd lost your energy.
Yeah, and, you know, there's no doubt that we looked flat. You know, the things that we did in the first quarter with, you know, break perimeter and things when we had the ball, and we weren't doing that. And, you know, then you start to question. I thought it was more the mind than probably the body. It took us about 2 hours 50 to get down and about the same to get home after the game. So that's not an excuse. It's where we put up. You know, there's some great advantages being here. And if we've got to travel on a bus, it's no excuse for us. And, yeah, that's the disappointing part. It would have been you know, an amazing bus trip on the way back if we would have done the job, but we end up just pretty much looking at each other and wondering what if, and, you know, we want to change that. That's not the way we want to go about it in our footy, and we've done a bit of work and had some really good chats, and I suppose this hub environment allows us to do that. So it's been really good to debrief this game and really dig a lot deeper on what are we going to do next, and it might only be that we're in this sort of, you know, team coming at us, or it might be for us to come at teams. So it's been a good conversation.
Jared, the long bus ride home sort of puts you in the perspective of some of the fans, doesn't it? Like, if you're a family going to the footy,
yep,
the car ride home's the best part if you're listening to the radio callers talk about the win, but pretty tough if you have a loss.
It wouldn't have been all that pleasant. The bus ride home after a win, though, I'm not sure if it you would have broken rank and got a couple of dozen bottles for the boys on the way home. Rats, but I guess you didn't have to answer that question.
No, it was even my birthday, Jared. So it was like a double whammy. But yeah, it was disappointing. And you know, we've played some very good footy through, you know, this season. But they're the ones that sit, you know, and really churn at you when you think, geez, what we could have done. But as a group, we've got to become better at this. And you know, teams are going to come at us. A lot of teams and a lot of games have been, you know, really swinging with momentum. You look at sort of the Brisbane Geelong game. You could name a heap of games that, you know, teams have really come at teams late. And it's your ability to, you know, mentally, physically get the job done. And that's what we're trying to make sure that this group does.
I'm going to keep examining the bus trip with Lee Matthews afterwards. I'm just wondering what his theory is, given it had a latent period of about 35 minutes, the flatness. But I reckon sometimes the lack of accuracy in front of goal can rob you of your energy. And you missed about four genuine, easy shots in front of goal in that second term, which would have blown the Dockers off the park.
Yeah, it would have. I suppose that, you know, they're the things that you sort of chat about as well, the missed opportunities to do what you want to do. And we have been accurate in front of goals, and that was just a period that we were poor. But you know, we're creating some good shots in that, but really to give up, you know, 36 inside 50s and 16 shots at goal after quarter time is really the defensive work that we did in the game. And we did have some offensive opportunities, but defensively we have to get, you know, better in this space, and that's what we'll be working on.
Brett, you hinted at some tough love at the selection table this week. What areas of the ground will you look to sharpen up?
Oh, there's a few things that we sort of started with match committee, and you know, we've gone through I suppose a pretty good review with the players and really trying to get the honesty about their performance, and you know, and not just the players. It's, you know, sometimes what is happening on the field is a reflection of what the bench is like and what the box is like as well. So when we do review this stuff, it's not just about the players, it's everybody takes accountability in this space. So, yeah, we've gone through that, and there will be some changes. You know, Long's Benny's out now for 3 weeks, so that'll give somebody an opportunity, and then, you know, we'll just have a look at some of the other spots. But yeah, there's some players in really good form in you know, in the scratch matches, in, you know, Sinclair, Burns, Ryder, Savage has been good form, Bytel, Roberton. So we've got some players to think about, and their names have been bandied around already.
Bottom line, Rats, you kicked 11 goals, and I think it's only about three or four times this year a team's kicked 10 goals and lost. So on that basis, at least you must have thought you weren't too far away.
Yeah. We did it all in the first league with seven, so it was pretty hard struggle after that. But, you know, we've sort of acknowledged what we can do well, but we actually have to acknowledge when it's not going our way, how do we stem that flow? And that's really what we've put a fair bit of energy in about how we can do that. And, you know, we strategised a bit more about what we can do from the coach's box as well to support the players on field and give them some extra tools to maybe state what we're doing as well. So that's important.
So what's the travelling circumstances this week? You've got Adelaide in Adelaide, and then you've got Port for memory. Do you stay in Adelaide or are you going back to Noosa?
No, we are going back to Noosa, and then we travel down on the Saturday morning with Essendon, stay overnight in Adelaide, and then come home with Essendon after their game, which they play, they'll be sort of finished around 4:30, 5 o'clock on Sunday afternoon. So we'll be in Adelaide, not this weekend, but the following, for sort of the Saturday, Sunday. And, yeah, we'll be just straight down there on Monday and, play the game and come back on Tuesday morning. So, yeah, I don't know if we've got the opportunity to stay there. It does get a bit more complicated with, you know, all this COVID, and we're just doing what we're told from the AFL, which we're happy to do that.
One more for me, Rat. Now, I said on this program last week, I'd love to say it was an exciting, high-scoring thriller, which is really what your game was. But as a coach, have you got any feel about, like, the game's good to watch, or is it totally about the scoreboard, which normally what coaching's all about?
Yeah, I'm with you with the scoreboard. You know, as long as your nose is in front by the end, that's the main thing. But I think you sort of do look at, you know, what you're trying to do offensively and what you're trying to do defensively. So, you know, we probably, as you mentioned, we kicked enough score to win that game, but we didn't deny the opposition scoreboard pressure back the other way, and they got their opportunity. So I'd rather not be in the you know, the category of we're an excitement machine and we've got great entertaining games. It's about us winning 4 points. And if we can play good football and play it on our terms, that's a bonus. But, to sit there and say, we both kicked a really good score, but, we should have been able to defend that score as well.
None of the coaches have publicly been whinging. Everybody's been really positive, and I think ultimately that's the only approach, given that not much is going to change. But can you tell me, Rats, how many cylinders, if the machine of St Kilda is a six-cylinder motor, how many cylinders are you running on at the present time by way of preparation leading into a game?
I suppose what I would say is all areas of your program are compromised.
Yep.
Because of training together, even some of the, you know, the weight sessions and what you can do and things like that. So we're probably at about four, you would say, Jared. Yep. You know, we don't really get a lot of team training together with contact. So they're the things that we've got to compromise. The great thing is all the other teams are doing the same. So it's what it is for us, it is for them. So it's there's no advantage or disadvantage. I think that's probably just some of the challenges of, you know, the program and everybody in the program to accept that, because we're sort of used to the normal. This is what we could do. Now this is what we have to do. And just adjusting to that's really important.
Brett, we always love having you on. Appreciate it, even after a loss. Happy birthday, by the way, for the weekend, and good luck for the rest of the year.
How many years now?
One off the half century, Jared. So
okay. Ah, you're only a pup.
Yeah.
Wish I was 50 again.
No worries. Well, thanks for having us, John.
Brett Ratten there, the coach of the Saints. Jared?
It's a long time to wait to rectify what was a shocking performance by the Saints. They were by far and away the best side on that ground till about the 15-minute mark of the second quarter. Yep. They had shot after shot. Max King mixed a couple. He looked really good. looked like he could have kicked six. He had a couple of shots missed in the first quarter, dropped a couple of marks he should have clunked, and he missed a couple in the second quarter, as did a few others. So you can imagine that, a three-hour bus trip after that performance.
Particularly after what they did in round one against North.
It would have been gut-wrenching. And I reckon Rats would have seen it as an opportunity to do a little bit of bonding. It's his birthday. He would have said to somebody, righto, sometimes you've just got to break the rules. Toucan limit, make the trip.
Pick up a couple of slabs.
Couple of slabs. Let's enjoy it. Would have been fantastic.
You know, I did the Nathan Buckley press conference today. And for some reason, I backed out of the question. I just thought, nah, I'm not going to ask it. But I was actually going to say, because they've got a 10-day break after they play Geelong on Thursday.
Yeah. Where are they?
They're in Joondalup.
Okay, over in Perth. Right. Yeah. Well, fantastic spot.
So 10 days, you can't do anything.
Four-can limit.
Yeah. Do you reckon they would have a night?
Absolutely.
And they should, shouldn't they?
Absolutely.
Sit around,
they
tell
should.
Stories, yeah. Watch a couple of stupid movies, or whatever it is.
Win, lose, or draw, I reckon they're entitled to night of or the night after.
Yeah.
At least have a
six-pack age.
At least have a hair-letting-down exercise.
Sure.
Whatever it is, but as you know and everyone listening knows, if you've got the 4 points in the bag,
I think
it's a much better night.
I think the coach's drink of choice is gin, actually.
G&T's?
Yeah.
No, that's fair enough.
As it should be.
The great EJ Witten's choice of drink.
What was his?
Was G&T.
Was it really?
Yep.
What's your choice these days?
G&T. Has been for years.
More Sports Day after this.
You're listening to Sports Day for Wilson Homes. Scoop, they believe in great design, so
yes.
You love being home. We saw one of the great debuts on the weekend, and he's become a cult figure overnight. We spoke to him a couple of years ago at the draft. His name's Isaac Rankin. It's taken a long time for us to interview him after a game. But
it was worth it.
It was a hell of a beauty. Isaac joins us as the winner of the Rising Star Award for round six. Welcome to you, Isaac. Congratulations on your first outing.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Gee, it's been a while between drinks. We spoke to you at the draft a couple of years ago. I can't believe it's taken you this long to get on the park, and you saved your best for first.
Yeah, obviously that was a while ago. The draft night, pretty special moment, but obviously, it's taken me a few, I guess, 18 months to get across the line, but yeah, I'm happy to be here.
Well,
finally.
Finally indeed. Since then, your hair's changed, but your talent obviously hasn't.
Yeah, as they say, you know, that's what boredom does here. Went back home, got a bit bored and dyed the hair.
Hey, Isaac, given the build-up, and you talk about the 18 months and a long time, were you nervous in the start of your first game, or were you just relieved to finally get out there?
Yeah, I think leading into the week, I wasn't too sure if I was playing at all, really. And then when Stewie told me, all those nerves started kicking in, and I was like, I was pretty nervous going into the game. Probably the most nervous I've been in my life. But as soon as I crossed that that line and started kicking a few balls out in the field, all those nerves just turned into excitement, and I was happy to be there, and I was really soaking in the moment and just doing the most I can for the team.
Jared, he didn't look nervous when he had his first touch, and he kicked it over his shoulder like he'd done it 700 times before.
Gee, I hope you stay nervous for a long time. Stewie Jew wants you nervous every week. Are you surprised at how much the footy world's fallen in love with you? Because let's be honest, you've been doing this for years.
Yeah, I am pretty surprised. I've always been wanting this moment, and always wanted to play AFL footy. You know, every kid's dream is to play AFL, I'm just embracing the moment and trying to stay humble and appreciate all the messages and everyone embracing me. So, yeah, I'm enjoying the moment.
Were you happy that Hutto was commentating your first game because he got excited?
Oh, yeah, that was pretty special, yeah. No, it was good. You made a good call, really.
Who's your favourite commentator out there? Is it Hutto or Dwayne, or is it BT?
I think it's going to be BT. Just the Roman BT.
You're going with the big bristle.
BT will be happy with that. Hey, Isaac, talk us through your skills in the guitar as well. Jared and I saw some vision come through from the club today. You've got a bit of special talent there.
Yeah, with the guitar. I guess Dad's been playing all his life, and he taught me when I was little and taught a few, chords and riffs, and then I took it off from there. I just, YouTube tutorials, just whatever song I like, just, try and copy it. But, yeah, I've been carrying that on since I was, 10, since you can really hold a guitar. And, And I continue to do that today just to you know, relax those nerves, like I said. And, yeah, good to just sit back and play guitar and not worry about, you know, the training and the intense of AFL life.
You got a good voice?
I don't like my voice, but I was playing guitar and I started writing raps and stuff. So that's where it kind of all started, when I started writing raps and playing guitar. So
what's your best rap song? Can you got a verse or two for us?
No, sore throat today, actually.
Very clever. He's too smart for us, Jerry.
Absolutely. Hey, it must be a great time on the Gold Coast right now after going through 12 months of, well, not despair, but would have been pretty tough without playing.
Yeah, obviously that was probably... I never really got injured, obviously, growing up through my junior ranks and in the sample, never really got injured. So when I did get injured, I only thought it was going to be a few weeks, but that turned into a few months, and then those months turned into, you know, a year. So as soon as I, you know, got called up to the team, I kind of knew I was ready, but again, I was nervous. But yeah, I was so excited to be able to chasing that ball again and just, you know, felt like a kid again. So that was good.
Who are you living with on the Gold Coast at the moment, Isaac?
Yeah, so I moved back to Adelaide for the COVID break, but then I thought I'd come back in and, you know, make sure that I was ready for when footy did return. And I decided to move in with Sam Collins. So he's taken me under his wing and taught me a few things. So
your favourite, Jared.
Yeah, he's done a great job, hasn't he, Sam? I've been really happy with what he's done. Got the flick from Fremantle and got picked up after a year in the VFA. And he's one of the best defenders in the game right now.
Yeah, he's an ultimate professional. I was really surprised about how he goes about it. But, everything they see on the field of him, you know, intercept marks and taking all those clunks. So he puts a lot of hard work in, and especially I get to see that now that I live with him. He's really shown me the way, and I'll definitely take a leaf out of his book, you know, going into the future.
It's always hard for young players moving into state. Isaac, are you missing SA?
Didn't want to leave too much, but now that I've spent my time here and the club's really embraced me, which is the best thing. And it really made it a good environment for me to thrive, I guess. And I haven't looked back since, really. I love it on the Gold Coast.
That's great
news. Yeah, best place to live.
Now, I'm told that there was another bloke that people were talking about that was making a few noises until he hurt his shoulder a couple of weeks ago. But ultimately, I mean, he's only the dessert. You're the main course as far as electrifying youngsters is concerned. That would be straight from the horse's mouth, wouldn't it?
Yeah, Rally's unreal. He's coming to the club with a great attitude. Just to see him go about how he goes about it is great to see someone, you know, that young, be that professional and really just take advantage of the opportunity he's got. He's, yeah, everything I see in the field, like I said, like, he works that hard for it, so I'm really happy for him. But I'm disappointed again that he hurt his shoulder, but
yeah,
I know he'll come back, you know, better than we saw in the first couple of rounds.
You're going to be pushing up the midfield surely at some stage.
Yeah, if you could message Stewie and tell him to put me up there, that'd be good. But yeah, I've always wanted to play a bit of midfield, and in the state comp they threw me in there, and even at sample level they put me in there a bit. But obviously I've started my forward, but hopefully I can develop and get into the midfield.
Now, Jared, if you ever buy something out, like if we went down to men's club and they said, "Well, who helped you out?"
Yeah.
You know, with buying your jacket, that person might get a little bit of a sales commission. Mm. What they're actually doing at the Gold Coast Suns at the moment with their memberships is, if you buy a membership, you can pick a player who sort of helped you out with it or who inspired you to get one.
Yeah.
And then the players are having a comp internally.
I like it.
So I think at the moment it's as little as $39 you can actually sign up to be a member of the Gold Coast Suns. So I don't know about Jared, Isaac, but I'm happy to, I don't know if you've started yet, but I'm happy to cough up the money and put you down so you'll be one up ahead of everyone.
Yeah, definitely. We got a little competition going here right now, and actually, as we speak, the boys are on the phone signing up members. So,
well, so are you.
A big push for the club.
We'll get Scoop signed up. It's pretty tough getting $39 out of him at the best of times. So sign him up now. Make sure he commits.
Okay, I'm in, Isaac. I don't know how much I'm in for, but I'm in for a membership.
Even you, Jared. Make sure you sign up.
Yes.
What price can you give?
Everyone in studio.
What price? You got $39 for Scoop.
It's a special deal.
How much lower can you go?
Can't get away that easy.
Righto, mate. You give us a call. You can get my number. And I'll definitely jump on board. As long as time you go for that hanger, you actually get on top of the shoulders and take the mark.
If I take a hanger next week, you'll have to sign the whole family up.
Sounds good to me. You must have thought about that hanger. That was a missed opportunity, wasn't it?
Yeah, I was talking to Maisie before that, and I told him to be sit down. I'm going on his head, so I'll try it again and see if I can mark it.
Hey, Isaac, you're great to watch. We're hoping that you can stay on as a regular for Sports Day because we love chatting to you. Good luck for the rest of the year.
No worries. Thank you for that. Thanks for having me again.
Oh, yeah, I'm doing the game next weekend. It's the Suns versus the Swans.
Yep.
So I'll be there ready to go with a credit card. You make sure you jump on their shoulders.
No worries, I'll get it done.
Isaac Rankin there, the Round 6 Rising Star nomination. Geez, they've got some players to be excited about.
Oh, absolutely. It's an absolute ripper.
I mean, for everyone that we were talking about before this year started, Jared, and then to see what Ben King's doing and the coach just looks like he's settled in.
Tell you what I haven't heard for the last month. Wind up the Gold Coast and send them to Tassie. I haven't heard that for a while. A lot of strong people with that sentiment 3 months ago.
And no one happier than Tony Cochran.
I spoke to Tony during the week. He's going well.
He's happier?
Yeah, he's happy. He's a good man.
He's
tightened up over the last month.
The day that the Gold Coast Suns playing their first grand final, if Tony Cochran is still chairman,
he may go through the list. There's a lot of names on his list. He may go through a lot of them.
Is Ross Lyon still on that list?
Oh, yeah, he'd be on the list, yeah. No, I think he's got begrudging respect for Ross, but he'd give him one on the way through.
This is Sports Day for Wilson Homes. We'll be right back after this between Jared and myself, who are now two Gold Coast Suns members.
Well, this is Sports Day for Wilson Homes. They believe in great design, so you love being home. It's time now to rejoin our chief football writer of the AFL record. Ash Brown joins us after round 6, where the world is closing down here on the eastern coast of Australia. And luckily for us, Ash, the great game continues on unabated as we speak. But I'm not sure that's going to be the case for too much longer. Welcome to you.
Good to be here. Yes, New South Wales is a bit concerning now, isn't it? So I think AFL will be trying to get out of there before too long.
It could be a very, very busy state of Queensland in the next couple of weeks if New South Wales closed down and all of a sudden you've got St. Peter having to swallow a little bit of pride and ship everybody out of New South Wales.
My understanding is AFL's moved very quickly, haven't they, to shore up all those hub venues till later in the year. So if that's right, that's a smart move by the AFL. It's all writing on the wall.
If you had to nominate where the AFL Grand Final is going to be as of, June 5th, July 15th or thereabouts?
Yep, July 14th.
July 14th. Where will it be?
Well, I handicapped the field in the record this week, and I actually wrote it'll be in Stadium Australia, but I think between going to print the record and the record coming out, I might have got that wrong. So now, if I could take a mulligan, I would say possibly the Adelaide Oval might be the location.
Not Optus Stadium, Ash.
It should be Optus Stadium. My worry is, have they got a better chance of getting more supporters from the two teams to Adelaide than they would.
I think you can absolutely discount that. Let's say there's no Adelaide. Well, Port Adelaide may be there, clearly.
But you'd pack it out anyway, wouldn't you?
You're going to pack it out anyway.
Yeah.
But you're not going to get anybody coming across the border because our good friends in South Australia, they haven't let anybody in from Victoria for a good 8 weeks.
Well, no one's letting us in, Jared.
They're not going to let us in come grand final time, particularly if it means the tickets are going to be more expensive.
We're more chance of Jacinta across the Tasman letting us to New Zealand before we are getting to South Australia, let's be honest.
Okay, across the ditch.
Yeah, that's right. What did I say, the Tasman?
You went to Tasman. Well, it's probably both. That's going to be an interesting one, but with every hour, every resting hour, it would appear as if Stadium Australia is going to be a long shot.
Yeah, well, that's right. As I said, I'm taking a mulligan on that one now, so we'll disregard this week's record, at least that page.
Only one journo at some matches, press conferences afterward during the COVID. Is that a good or a bad thing?
I think it's a bad thing. I think it's hard work for the journo to be across everything for both teams and ask probably, only the sort of very basic, obvious questions. The more eyes there are watching the game from the media box and at the media conference, the more varied, interesting and probing of the questions to the coaches. So there's not a lot of choice going around at the moment. We can't get to the games. And I know the AFL is trying to work on a couple of ideas where journalists watching on TV can speak to coaches via Zoom post-game. But it's not an ideal situation where you've got one journo at the press conference. It's been the situation in the A-League for a while, but now that's unfortunately spread to the AFL.
Big talking point this week clearly has been the stink between John Longmire and Damien Hardwick. Started with some jibber-jabber at the Gabba by Damien Hardwick.
Loved that terminology.
I enjoyed it. Yeah, I did enjoy that one. Mr. T was one of my favourites. Do you think the Swans protest too much?
Yeah, I think so. As I understand it, John Longmire had his say, rebutted it the next day, but the Swans kept on going through a few different avenues. So, you know, I think it's fair for Dimmer to say what he said. It's right for John Longmire to respond the next day. He usually does speak on a Monday, so there's nothing unusual in that. And then just let it move on. I mean, it's interesting to have a bit of byplay between coaches because, as you guys would know, they're a very fraternal bunch these days. Mm. I mean, so many of them have these deep networks going back to having played together or worked together, particularly at a couple of clubs. And for the fact that to have that sort of exchange of words made for good theatre, and it's not the worst thing.
I'm not sure Andrew Pridham had to weigh in today. I know he tried to crack a few gags, etc. But it just seems to me, given that the Swans have been a doer watch over the last decade or so, with despite having great success, they certainly haven't been the side that I would have pushed up the top of the most watchable for the last decade.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I was talking before about continuing to go on with it, as Andrew Pridham talking today. I actually haven't seen that story, but I've heard that he had a few words to say today. So, yeah, I would have left it with John Longmire saying what he did, and then the story dies a natural death. The Swans want to keep it going. Then all it does is people want to scrutinise their style of play and go back through over the years where you're right, they've been a very dual watch.
Mm.
I mean, if you take Lance Franklin out of that side, they haven't been watchable. Aesthetically pleasing.
No, it's
about
a contested ball down the line, contested ball down the line, take territory, get a stoppage, contested ball down the line. The irony for me, Hash, has been I reckon I've seen a really genuine attempt to change that this year and play a better brand of football, and yet they've been absolutely cruel with injury. So therein lies the irony. But tell me about Russell Jackson's article on TV Footy. I don't know Russell Jackson. I don't know of Russell Jackson. I have heard some rather disparaging reflections on his article from people in the TV world. What's he actually said?
Well, Russell wrote a piece for the AB. Russell's a well-known sports writer. He's at The Guardian for a long time. He wrote a piece just posing the question, really, is one of the reasons that the game is on the nose as a spectacle is because it's not being viewed, it's not being watched, it's not being filmed the right way by the broadcasters. He raised some examples of he went through the, I think it was the Fremantle-Adelaide game, was a game that he sort of examined quite forensically, and went through four or five episodes of play and said, what we didn't see was, we didn't see the incident of play or the passage of play properly because of the camera angles. And he spoke to a couple of people at club level, a couple of coaches, a couple of football analysts, and some people with a background in TV to sort of pose a question, is there a better way of shooting the game? Got some mixed responses, but I do understand a few people. I think at the place you might work at, your other employer, Jared, might have been a bit upset with some of what he wrote. But he's taking the angle that football's been shot from the wing for a very long time, and he traced it back to Alf Potter back in the 50s, the legendary sort of Channel 7 football director, you know, who wrote the book on how to broadcast and how to film AFL football for matches, and worked through that, and just posed a question: if the behind the goal vision is the vision that's so treasured by coaches these days, why don't we see more of that during the match broadcast?
Well, I think the answer to that, Ash, is, and I know the answer to that because I pose a question, can we possibly put up behind the goals vision of a match on KO? So you have an elective, or you have the capacity to elect to either watch it from behind the goals or watch it from the wing with its inevitable close-ups and even wide shots. And the reason that they don't put it on KO is because nobody watches it in that particular mode. So they have trialled it. And, I mean, it is great from an educational perspective. There's only one way to watch footy if you're a coach or you're an analyst trying to find out what's exactly going on, and that is from the behind the goals. But the trouble is that the people out in the street...
Yeah, they wouldn't want to watch a game like
that's
that.
That's the last thing they want, and they've trialled it. So, unfortunately, there is these things have been tried, and Russell Jackson's applying 2020 questions to questions that were asked in 1995 and 2000, etc., and the answers are well known.
Yeah, and you're certainly right. I mean, what are the premium when you buy tickets for the footy when we're allowed to go?
Yeah.
What are the premium seats on the wing? You don't pay premium to watch footy from behind the goal. So, but he was just having the discussion. I mean, I don't think he came up with definitive answers, but there are people within footy. I mean, and look, the people who work in football analysis are the ones who are saying, yeah, there's better ways of shooting the game. And of course, I don't see the full picture from watching the Channel 7 or Fox footy broadcast. But these people who are deeply schooled in how the game is played. For the layperson, like most of us, what we get on the TV is, from the wing shot, as it is, gives us plenty. But it's a very difficult, but Russell also made the point in defense of him, it's a very difficult game to fill. It's a huge playing area, the largest playing area of any football code or any contact sport in the world, with 36 players and a ball that bounces unpredictably. So it's a very hard game. It's totally different to rugby league and rugby union soccer, which, and American football, which I guess are the main comparisons.
And I think from an educational perspective, the behind the goals vision is such a different view to the wing vision. One's up close and one's very wide, that it would take you a minute or so to readjust and to familiarise yourself with exactly which player was that, who's over there, how many they got, one, two, three. I mean, we just haven't got that much time. So a lot of these things are fantastic in theory, and trust me, these theories have been examined ad nauseum over the last 25 years as technology grew. But those questions have been well and truly answered.
Jared, we like to involve the Chief, Ash, in our word misuses.
Yep.
Your biggest gripe is the misuse of?
Hone and home.
Well, I think someone that coaches a club pretty close to your heart may have had a misuse recently. Let's go to the tape.
You know, we've got 5 weeks away together. Great opportunity to try and really hone in on what we need to fix and get it done. We just need to get it done.
Only has his selection been worrying over the last few weeks, he's jumped on board the hone bandwagon.
His word selection is equally
that is horrific.
For discussion.
You're going to have to write this article, Ash.
And Ash, before we get your comment on that, Jeff Horn, who has just announced another big All-Australian bout against Tim Tsu, Costa's son, said something that a lot of us hate to hear when it comes to sport.
Look, I've got the ample experience on what Tim's done in his career. I've versed world champions. I've fought Hall of Famers, legends like Manny Pacquiao. I've fought Terence Crawford, and I've learnt heaps in my career, and I've versed absolutely talented, extremely awesome fighters out there already.
Is verse now acceptable, though?
No.
Excuse me.
Absolutely not. Okay. But it's a generational thing.
What about versing? I'm versing.
No.
Collingwood's versing Essendon. How many times have I heard that at home?
What about Ash just jumped on it and said it's a generational thing? When in doubt, blame the youngsters.
No. Blame the millennials.
Blame my kids. My kids say verse. In that way, and it makes you cringe every single time. But I hope it will go out. But the Macquarie Dictionary, fellas, is the arbiter, and I think they haven't allowed versing to become a verse yet.
The real arbiter in our great game is the footy record. What's in this week's edition?
In this week's footy record, we have a look at the derby game between Fremantle and West Coast.
Yep.
Josh Kendi's 250th game. A bit of an analysis as well. A bit of a look at the issues facing the Hawks. And we have a good look at Port and Carlton, which has suddenly stuck up as a potential game in the round. Sam, your boy's looking very good.
He's not prepared to put his hand up and say, I was wrong about my old Blues.
Well, I wasn't. I'm still not. I think they'll get pants by Port Adelaide. This has been, good on you, Ash. This has been Sports Day for Wilson Homes.
Hawthorn's getting around.
Chat with one of their friendly staff today about personalising a home design to suit your individual lifestyle. I don't just jump on and off like a lot of others do. Jared, I'll wait for my time, and the Blues have got a lot of convincing.
You've got to remember to get on board, though, before the plane leaves the airport.
We'll see you tomorrow, folks.
Or is that train leaving the station?